Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So another Tudong talk. Before myself and Thunpa Mutoh left for Tudong a fortnight ago, today would be day 15. We just got back this morning into the monastery about 8:30 a.m. And before I left, I was looking in myself, seeing how do I feel before going on this Tudong, and because I went last year for a little over 5 weeks, walking with Venerable Tipapo from here to Pacific Hermitage in Washington. And before that walk, it was quite a little bit of fear, some nervousness, not knowing at all what's going to happen. And but then before this Tudong, it's like, okay, it's just going to be 2 weeks. And looking at myself before going, and the feeling was exactly the same as last year. It's just as uncertain, just as not sure what's going to happen. So it's always new, it's always fresh. So for those who don't know, Tudong refers to a tradition of monastic wandering that happens in Thailand. And because we are the Thai forest tradition, we're also the Thai Tudong tradition, stemming from Thanachan Mun, Thanachan Cha, and all of the Gengan, Bodhiyana, Thera, all the branches and stems of Lungpo Cha. And this Tudong tradition is very much alive in Thailand. So it's monastic wandering, but also it's a way to face uncertainty and to test oneself against being out of the monastery. We still follow all of our precepts, all of our 227 Bhikkhu precepts, but a lot of them get highlighted when we're doing one of these wanderings, one of these Tudongs, and attempting to bring this tradition to the West. A tradition in Thailand is when a Bhikkhu reaches his completes his fifth vasa, then he will get an opportunity to go Tudong. Usually with a more senior monk who will show him the ropes. So Thanpa Mutoh has just completed his fifth vasa. And so we are at a time here in America where we have the opportunity to be creating and establishing traditions. And so it's taking that opportunity and establishing a Tudong tradition and seeing if it works. Not quite sure where to start because it's still very fresh that we just got back today, and a lot of it isn't that easy to express or talk about because it's quite a special time. The word that keeps coming to mind is sacred. It's a sacred experience. And it's very raw facing of uncertainty. And uncertainty is something, this is the heart of the Buddhist teaching, uncertainty, anicca, translated sometimes as impermanence, but on Tudong, the uncertain aspect is definitely highlighted. So uncertainty, and then bringing oneself into a position of being in complete uncertainty. And that also ties in with death contemplation because death is the ultimate uncertainty. And so this is also a facing of death, something that everybody has to go through. That's a big part of our training is learning how to die in our experience. That's meditation. That's what's happening. And then another thing that I think gets highlighted in the Tudong experience is the way that blessings and the way that merit and boon, punya, the way those things actually work and operate. So it becomes highlighted. It seems to me that these things operate in circles. So even when you have a good intention or a wholesome volitional formation, that sends a circle out, and then it comes back to one. But then it keeps turning. So you're turning wheels, and you're creating circles of good karma with something like Tudong. So I guess I'll just start at the beginning and see what happens. 2 weeks ago, after Ajahn Amaro's talk, he themed part of his talk on Tudong and the fact that we were about to go Tudong. And so Metika from Fort Bragg, she was here. And that evening after Ajahn Amaro's talk, she gave us a ride to Three Jewels, where we spent the night in Fort Bragg. And then the next morning, it was raining in the morning, and we're like, okay, we're gonna start walking, and she's checking the weather report, like, what are you guys gonna be walking in? Also, something we're trying to think of, like, how to explain Tudong to people who don't know about it. And when we meet people, it's like, okay, we're doing a walkabout. Well, that's kind of, and then some people were explaining, oh, it's this tradition in Thailand called Tudong. Then eventually by the end, I just started calling it a peace walk. It's like, we're doing a peace walk. And then everybody's like, oh, wow, okay, great. You're doing a peace walk. So that's what it was too. That's something people can relate to. So Metika, she brought us for breakfast at the depot in Fort Bragg, which seemed to be a good place to send us from, the depot. And so we had breakfast there. And a couple days before, we had led the meditation Dhamma talk at Three Jewels. So a couple people who were at the talk showed up at the depot to send us off and give us their best wishes and tell us they hope we were okay. And we had a big breakfast. And then Metika wanted to send us off with something, you know, more substantial. We thought maybe we might get more food in Fort Bragg walking out because it's still in the morning time, but we have to eat before noon. But Metika said, oh, can I just get you some sandwiches here and you can just take them with you and have them before noon? And one of these principles we were talking about beforehand is when there's an offer on the table, never say no, because you don't know what's going to happen later. So we said, okay, we'll take the sandwiches. So already we're trying to put these principles into practice. And sure enough, yeah, no other offerings of food in Fort Bragg. And so Metika sort of left us at the depot and it was raining. And so we're fiddling with our rain gear and we actually hadn't tested it out that much. So we're kind of fiddling with it and trying to get our bags on. It's all kind of wonky and we kind of go stumbling down the road, and Metika's kind of, I could just imagine what her mind was doing. Like, these guys, what are they doing? And so we're, started walking in the rain. And a lot happened that day, which I don't really need to go into, but we ended up kind of going into McCarricker and eating our sandwiches there before noon and heading north further. And we don't really know where we're going to get alms because it's a pretty remote area if you go north out of Fort Bragg. The way Tudong works here in the West is you have to be in a town between dawn and noon so that you can get food. And in Thailand, the way it works is you'll walk through a village and you can get food. People just toss food in the bowl as you walk by. But in the West, how it ends up is you stand in front of a market, and even a small town will find the market and stand kind of off to the one corner, a place where people can see us, but where it's not imposing on people. And people, you know, might approach us, offer money. And we say, you know, that's a very generous offer, thank you, but we can't use money according to our precepts. They ask what we can use. We say we're seeking food. And so then they end up going and buying some food for us. That's usually how it works in the West. So we're walking north out of Fort Bragg thinking, okay, there's this little dot on the map that says Inglenook, and there's this little dot on the map that says Westport, and there's a little dot on the map that says Rockport, but we don't know what's in each of these towns. So it's really going on faith, completely not knowing what's going to happen. So, but one thing we do know is we can just keep walking, keep moving forward. So it's like walking meditation. So it's getting on in the afternoon, we're walking, we end up, the rain kind of lets up, and we stopped and kind of took off our gear, and we were taking a little break, and then right when all our gear was off, then it just started pouring rain, so then our gear is all wet, and it's like, okay, so get our rain gear back on, and walking again, it starts raining pretty hard that first day, and so it's like, okay, well, day one, and we're just walking in the rain, and truck pulls up. It's maybe like 3 in the afternoon. We've been walking for a while. Truck pulls up. Lady gets out and says, "Hey, do you guys need a ride or anything?" And we said, "Well, do you know of any like abandoned buildings where we could like get out of the rain tonight or something?" And she said, "I've already got it worked out. Get in." So. So we get in, and she takes us to a house, like a mile ahead, and it's like they have a guest house for us. So then, and it's not even her, but it's her neighbors who she knew would be okay with it, but she hasn't checked with them yet. And this lady who picked us up, her friend, partner, was at the Three Jewels talk, and so somehow this network had gotten worked out, and it was perfect because it was just when it's starting to rain really hard. So we go to Ken and Sherry's, their neighbors, and they introduce us. Like, "These are these monks. We thought they could stay in your guest room. Is that okay?" And yes, thank you for knowing it would be okay. Yeah, of course. You know. So we meet them. They've got two dachshunds. We go into their living room, and just really interesting people. I could go on a long time about how interesting they are, but anyway, they have a separate house, like a guest room on top of a garage. So our first night, we got a dry place, got to hang out all of our wet stuff next to a heater and try to dry everything out. The next day, they gave us breakfast and sent us off with a whole bunch of canned food. They're really into canning, so canned fruit, canned everything. Sent us with a big bag of canned food, big breakfast. But then it was a beautiful day, so sunny, beautiful. We're going to start walking on day two. It's just a really lovely day. But they were warning us that at 2 a.m, there's a high wind advisory beginning, and then this is Friday, so then 2 a.m. Saturday, and then continuing on all day Saturday, there's this high wind advisory. It's supposed to be 40 to 60 mile an hour winds on the coast. So they're saying, yeah, you got to hole up somewhere, you know, find a safe place for shelter somehow. So we're thinking, well, if we camp, we got to find some sort of safe place. Don't know if we're going to get a roof over our head. So day two, we're walking. It's just a lovely day. We end up, you know, sitting at a beach and having all this canned food that they gave us, just a really good meal. And so we didn't have to go alms round that first or the second day. Yeah, and then, actually, that's right, we had a part of the meal at the beach just to keep ourselves walking, and then we had the main part of the meal in just a beautiful pine grove, really soft pine needles. We found that pine groves are really good for camping or just sitting down and having a rest because the pine needles are all very soft. And yeah, kept walking, got to a little town called Westport, which Wikipedia said it had a population of 67 people, but actually it's growing, so now it's got a population of 300. So, quaint little town. We walked through it thinking, okay, maybe tomorrow we'll go alms round in this town, but going through the town, there's not much there. There's one market, one little market in the town. Thinking, well, it's, you know, the day's getting on, it's 3 or 4 p.m. we gotta think of where we're gonna camp, keeping in mind there's this wind advisory, even though it's really nice and calm right now. Could be high winds during the night. We don't know for sure, but that's what the prediction is. So we ended up going out a side road just past Westport and, you know, going up a hillside and finding a flat place with the trees were interlocking, so we thought maybe it would be a good shelter. It seemed really secluded, really a place where we could hole up in the winds. So we got to try out our gear, which we made custom for camping. It's a rain poncho that becomes a tent, so we can take the rain poncho off, hang it from the line, and then stake down the four corners, and it becomes like a four-sided tent, just big enough for one person. So we get to set up our tents. It's still just really lovely evening. We can see the ocean through the trees and just watching the sunset. And then each night we were doing some chanting, some paritta chanting. Then go to sleep, and then just at about midnight, maybe about 11, then just like startled awake, the tent is just flying off. Just the wind is just like coming through so strong, and the stakes just rip out, and the tent is just like flapping on this line, and the rain is starting to come down too. So we're out in the middle of the night on this hillside, and it's just high winds, and both of us. Well, I don't know exactly what Tompamuto was doing, but I had to take the two corners of my tent that flew off, and I was just holding them down all night, just actually physically having to hold them down because the whole thing was just flying all over the place. So we were just up all night, just hoping for the morning to come, and thinking, just like, the morning came, and we're just like, this is crazy. and we packed up all our stuff really quick and got out of that place as soon as dawn came. And then the high winds were still there, and it was raining, and the rain was on and off, but the high wind was pretty constant. It'd be like 40, 50 mile an hour winds. And it's like, okay, well, it's time for alms round. So we're going to go alms round in Westport in 40 mile an hour winds. And the waves were huge, and just kind of rain was lashing down sometimes stopping. But we get our alms bowls out for alms round, have our ponchos on because it's kind of raining on and off, and the poncho is just like flying just to the side, just like completely not really doing anything for us, and all you could do was laugh. It was ridiculous. So we go into the town. This is the only hope for food this day, is this town in this stormy weather. And we go to the only market, and we only saw three people the whole morning. And one person we saw was the owner of the market, who showed up and said we could have anything we wanted in the market. And the second person we saw was the lady at the cash register in the market. And the third person was like some guy who just came into the market and left. And so we got a hot meal that day. And yes, it's kind of astounding that we got something to eat. So we ended up, but it's still raining and windy, so we're walking, we've got food in our bowl, but where are we going to go? We're thinking we're going to go north up Highway 1, but there's another road, it's called Branscombe Road, and it goes to Laytonville from Westport. And so when we walked down that road, we noticed the wind was a lot calmer, so we're thinking we can't walk 10 more miles in this wind. And so we ended up turning to go east to Laytonville up this road. And at that point, the wind stopped, but then it just started pouring rain, and it just wasn't stopping. So we ended up walking for about 6 hours in just heavy rain and just slogging through the rain. And so this is like enduring hardships. We didn't sleep the night before, and then just walking all day in the rain. It's getting colder. There was also a hail advisory, so it was possibly going to become hail. And so it was getting really cold, too, so we really thought it was maybe even going to snow on us. And walking on this road, nobody was stopping. We're thinking, God, can't somebody just stop and give us a ride? And just nobody was stopping. But then I was thinking, what are these people thinking who see us? It's like these guys like walking in the heavy rain in the middle of nowhere, and I probably wouldn't pick them up. I just think they're crazy or something. So we're walking for about 6 hours. After about 4 hours of walking, we're really far onto Branscombe Road. Just like, let's just keep moving forward. Just keep moving. My mind is kind of doing the circles. Like, for a while, it's kind of like, you know, maybe this will happen, maybe that'll happen. But then eventually the mind just gives up. So it's just like just walking in the rain. And we get to the top of this mountain, and we're about to start heading down. We were going up for a really long time, and we're at the very top, and it's like almost no cars passing us, and it's raining, and then suddenly the road is covered in graffiti, the entire road for as far as like you can see, covered in writing and covered in painting, and it's really surreal. And you know, anything from swear words, you know, wishes, well wishing, it was like the wholesome and the unwholesome together written on the road, and people cursing each other, people loving each other, people saying hi to each other. People saying, like, you know, this guy is this and this and that, or this guy's dad is this and this and that. Like, just like, or like, and then there's like, I love you, and there's just the whole road covered in writing for about, you know, 100, 200 feet. And this is just amazing. And so we start heading down, and eventually we're thinking, like, there's no way we're going to make it to Laytonville. It's 20 miles. What are we going to do if we're caught out here? So we started realistically thinking, like, we're shivering. We're going to get hypothermia if we're out here for too long. And realistically thinking, like, we have to find a big culvert. We have to get out of the rain somehow. And then this van pulls over, and he says, yeah, I saw you guys this morning when I was taking my daughter to school, and now I'm going to pick her up. So, you know, I thought, you know, you guys are still walking. Yeah, I better give them a ride. So then it changes all of a sudden. We're in a car and getting a ride to Laytonville. So, yeah, this, you know, it's just some guy lives in Laytonville, gives us a ride in his van. The van is just, the heater is just blasting, so it's really, really nice, but we're completely soaked at this point. So we get into Laytonville, he drops us off. We think, okay, we're in Laytonville, but it's going to get dark in an hour, so what do we do? So first it's like, okay, let's head into this coffee shop across from the main market and just kind of get our bearings. It might be warm in there, we can warm up for a bit. So we go into this coffee shop, and sit down. And we're wet and also, you know, smelly, and we haven't bathed. And it's like, we don't want to be too close to people because we're aware of this. And you know, it's like, been walking but then we sit down in one corner, and then this lady just turns around with, you know, she gives us two large, like, hot teas. So she just offers them to us, and so it turns out she's from Willits, and she's aware of the Willits Alms Round. So special thanks to Steve for being part of that, for being a part of that circle. You know, that's, she explains, she knows things need to be offered, and, you know, can you eat right now? We said no, but thank you for the tea, and chat with her for a bit. And so then we go out. It's like, okay, we've got some dry clothes. We got to get off our wet clothes, get our dry clothes on, and kind of stay warm somehow, because we're kind of shivering at this point. And find out from a guy at the gas station, another kind of wanderer guy hitchhiking south. He says, yeah, there's this kind of orchard that you can stay at, bit north of town. You know, if you get there, you might have like a good campsite or something. So it's, okay, well, that's a lead. So we just start walking north out of Laytonville. And before long, a car pulls over, and it's a couple who, they were practicing Hinduism, but he's from LA, she's from Germany, and they recently got into Buddhism. So interested in what we're doing, asking, do we need anything? Do we need a ride? We said, well, you know, we're just kind of needing a place to stay this evening. And then they said, well, you know, we don't really know of anything, but we said, well, we're hoping for kind of a warm place, because, like, we're really wet, we're shivering. And the woman said, well, I used to live in Laytonville, or I still live in Laytonville, but I know that, why don't we take you guys to the laundromat? We'll dry all your clothes for you. So we get in the car, they take us to the laundromat, and we throw our clothes in the dryer in the laundromat. And so that was really great. And then we're sitting, chatting with them. They were getting more interested and hanging out with us for a while. And they disappeared and then came back with more teas, probably from the same coffee shop. So more hot teas. Hot liquid is good at this point. Dryer finishes. We put all of our warm gear on, and fresh out of the dryer. And then the young woman, she's saying, well, you know, if you're homeless, one of the best places to sleep in Laytonville is the bleachers at the stadium, at the sports stadium, at the local park. So you guys should go there. It's right next to the laundromat. It's right down the street. So we go, on that lead, we go to the bleachers. The bleachers have a roof over them. They're dry. They're wood. Sleeping on wood is comfortable. So that's where we stayed on our third night, was in the bleachers in Laytonville. We were really exhausted, so went to sleep pretty quick. At about 11 p.m., I was startled awake in the bleachers, and there was another homeless guy coming in to sleep in the bleachers. And I was kind of not sure what was going to happen. Like, is he, you know, somebody who's going to do something to us, or what's going to happen? So I kind of raised my head up and kind of wave. He's kind of startled. He kind of hadn't seen us, and he turns on a flashlight and shines it in my face. And then he turns off his flashlight. He's like, oh, Native Americans, okay. And then he goes to sleep kind of on the other side of the bleachers. I don't know why he thought we were Native Americans. I was just sticking my head out of my sleeping bag. So next day was alms round in Laytonville. I was hopeful. The market there, I've also got these water bottles, these platypus water bladder things that hold a liter of water. So we've got water purification system. We have a SteriPen, and also this something Genjira offered, these life straws, which we can drink really dirty water out of the life straw, drink it directly if we need to. So the next morning, our waters are empty. We're thinking, okay, well, maybe we'll go into the market and go into the bathroom and fill our waters, and I'll ask the cashier, can we stand out front for a little while? It's our practice as Buddhist monks, da-da-da-da-da. So I ask we fill our water bottles, ask the cashier, you know, can we stand out front? She calls the owner over. He says, yeah, for about an hour. Sounds okay. And so we stand out right away. Like when I was in filling the waters, people were already offering Tampamuto food, and somebody offered him biscuits and gravy and just more teas from the same place. And no, he doesn't even know who gave the teas. They just like jumped out of a car and gave him the teas and left. And it's the same, and it's also the same ones we ordered the night before. So it's the same exact ones. So they're like picking up on our preferences and offering teas to us. And he's got biscuits and gravy in his, and I come out and he's like, oh, Ajahn, people are offering food, teas, there's some tea here. And then right away, like one of the people who was working in the store comes out and he's like, oh, can I give you guys some money? We're like, oh, we don't accept money. Okay, I'll get you a sandwich. And so he goes back in and he comes out. The sandwich is being made. Okay, I got to go work. And then another guy who was working in the store came out and offered something else. And then somebody offered something. So we really quick, I mean, didn't have to stand there for very long, maybe 20 minutes, you know, at the most. A full meal, people wishing us well. So from there, we sat on the corner and drank our teas first, and then we headed out north on 101. Just walking for quite a while, had the food with us, thinking, okay, we'll stop before noon and have the meal somewhere. Walking for quite a while, just a really nice day, and turns out Metika was searching for us, and she was really worried about us. So she's been out searching. And it turns out she drove all the way up Highway 1 and all the way up to Leggett, and she decides, oh, I don't want to go back the same way, so I'm just going to loop around and go to Laytonville. So she passes us, and she's kind of like waving, and she has more food. So then we get in the car with her, and she takes us to a rest area, and we hang out, have the meal, give her a bit of an update, tell her, you know, email Debbie so she knows where we are and knows what's happening. She's like, okay. So then we start walking again from this rest area. We're a bit closer to Leggett. So yeah, I guess this is the fourth day. This is the fourth day, and kind of had in my mind a vague idea that this Tibetan Dharma Center, Rangchung Yeshe Gomde, I can finally say that after saying it hundreds of times, Rangchung Yeshe Gomde, which we know now as Gomde, so if I ever say Gomde, it refers to that place. And this is a Chöki Nyima Rinpoche Center in California. I'd only been there once 12 years ago when I was in Anagarika, and we had I'd gone with Lungpa and a group there to pay respects to Chöki Nyima Rinpoche. So I had a vague idea, maybe we'll pop in and say hi. There's no invitation, but maybe we'll just say hi and see what they say. And if it doesn't feel like they want to invite us, that's fine, but at least we can just reconnect and then keep walking. That'll be fine too. So, but I don't really know where it is. So we're walking along the freeway for quite a while, and eventually somebody picks us up and says, you know, I'm from Arcata, I'll give you a ride wherever. And one thing about walking on the freeway, it's where this four-lane freeway, it's really unpleasant. So we're happy to get a ride during those parts. This whole time, the whole Tudong, we're trying to keep our eye out for like alternative routes, ways we could bypass the freeway where it was either had no shoulder or was just really fast traffic, really dangerous. So yeah, we take this ride, and I say, oh, we'll go up to the Legate exit because we have this kind of vague idea there might be a center there we can go to. So he ends up dropping us off on the exit up to South Legate. We walk up, and there it is, prayer flags right there. You know, so okay, well, that must be it. So we walk in, and we just kind of looking around, and it looks like there's kind of a house that says office on it, and you know, before we even get to the house, this guy comes out. He says, "Welcome, all good to see you." And so Ryan, who's one of the main people looking after the area right now, he's a translator of Tibetan, and he's like, "Welcome, you know, what are you guys doing?" And so we connect with him, and you know, really, you know, right away, he just says, "Oh, you're welcome to stay here. We're so happy you're here." And he puts us in a house down by the Eel River, so we have this house, the River House, you know, to ourselves. It's got, you know, we have our own bedrooms and bathrooms in this house. And we can wash everything. There's a washer and dryer. We can wash all our stuff. We can shower. So it's like this amazing luxury. So we get to this house, and you know Ryan is just talking with us. We're connecting with him, and he's telling us, "Okay, you can get you're welcome to. We'll offer something to eat to you. You know, breakfast or a meal, whatever you want in the morning. So just come up in the morning." And so it's like really gratitude. It's like gratitude for blessings. Here it's, so we sit down, we do some meditation and chanting, and it's just you become, when you receive these kind of offerings, you become incredibly grateful for them, especially after you experience things like being wet and cold. You're really incredible gratitude. So go up in the morning, we meet the resident nun, who I'm just going to call Ani La, because I'm bad with names. I can't remember her name because it was kind of hard to say. She probably can't remember our names either. And yeah, Mary, who's also local, who just goes to morning and evening puja every day there, lives down the road. So they're there. They're doing a Shakyamuni puja, so kind of we're there, and they're doing a Shakyamuni puja, and they start making breakfast for us, and then they're offering breakfast. Ryan comes down, and yeah, turns out he's gonna drive to Garberville that day. And last year, myself and Tanti Tapa walked this section of highway from Legate to Garberville, and it was just really not that pleasant, not a good section of highway to be walking. Is where it's 4-lane freeway. So we say, yeah, we'll take a ride with Ryan into Garberville. And so we take a ride with him. They've kind of given us food from their pantry to for the meal, but also we're going to be in Garberville in time for the alms round. So decide, okay, we've had breakfast at Gom Day. We're going to have so alms round in Garberville, which we had really good experience last year in Garberville with the alms round at the main market there, and also at the natural foods store. People were really generous. So he gives us a ride into Garberville. This is, I think, yeah, day five. So we get out of his car, and right when we get out of his car, this homeless guy walks up to us, and he says, "Hey, I met you guys last year. I went dumpster diving for you and offered you to do some food." And I said, "Yeah, I remember. I remember that." But because the interaction, it's like, how do you relate to somebody like that, like who offered you food and then just left very quickly? And so I said, how are you doing? Like, what do you say? And he said, "Not good at all." And then he just walked away. And I thought, yeah, okay. Dukkha. That's dukkha. And so we're there. It's big scene. It's really different than last year. I was like, what's going on? There's like this, a lot of homeless people, but a lot of travelers too, everywhere, just hundreds of travelers and international, like people from different countries all over the place. I'm thinking, what is going on? And we walk over, we decide we're going to avoid the supermarket because it's really kind of a crazy scene there. We're going to go to the natural foods place. And there's like, you know, it's like kind of like this weird like carnival international thing happening, but we don't really know what's going on. And at the Central Park, there's like a guy playing a didgeridoo and woman playing congas and like this other guy doing like stick tricks and like people in dreadlocks all over the place and just... And so we're standing at the market, kind of watching this, at the natural foods place, watching the scene, and nothing's really happening. Kind of in the shadows, it wasn't actually a very good place to stand. But still, we got an offering of an apple. We got two apples, an apple each. But decide, okay, it's almost noon, let's walk through town, do another round, and we'll go through some of the streets in town and see what happens. So we go kind of down a side street in the town, and me and Titapo hadn't really gone down that particular area of town last year, so we're kind of exploring a bit, trying it out, and we walk back, and this Laotian man is standing in front of this restaurant, which I thought was a Chinese restaurant. It turns out it's like a Thai Lao restaurant called Cadillac Walk in Garberville. And I don't know why Cadillac, but... Walk, W-O-K, the Cadillac Walk. So it's like maybe a walk as big as a Cadillac, or it's like the Cadillac of all walks. So they're like, he's like, please, we want to offer you the meal. Please come in. So we go into Cadillac Walk, and it's pretty close to noon, and it's Lao. They're all Lao from Vientiane, and they're just completely over the moon that we're in there, and it's like... monks and so they're like shoving hot food in our, you know, plate after plate after plate of hot food, and the whole table's full of food. We don't even know where to start, so you can barely start eating because the whole table's just full of food, and it's kind of close to noon, but then they're talking to us too, so it's like we can't really... They're really excited, and it's like, okay, well, we'll have to eat. It's kind of close to noon, and it's like, okay. And so we kind of eat really fast, and then she's like bringing over, like, she's like running to the back room and getting out like grocery bags of food. She's like, take this with you. You're gonna go hungry. I'm worried about you. And like, well, our rules. We can't store up food. And what do you mean? And like, here's a bunch of money. Well, we can't use money, actually. Like, so they were just like throwing generosity at us. So then things kind of calmed down a bit, and we had the, they were just like really excited. And they said, well, you know, we're so excited because between Santa Rosa and Crescent City, there's not a single Thai or Laotian temple. We don't get an opportunity to make merit. It's like a no Thai, no Lao zone. Between Santa Rosa and Crescent City, it's like 300 miles of no temples at all. But they didn't know about us, so gave them the website. Like, yeah, check it out. It's got Thai on the website, so they were very happy, and you know, overly adamant if any Tudong monks come through in the future, of course, you know, go through there. So yeah, from there we knew me and Titapo had gone up the freeway from there, but we realized then we could actually go on a side highway through the town of Redway, which we didn't do last year. So we thought, well, we're not going up to Washington; we're actually staying more in the local region. So let's just go, you know, through Redway. And so we decide to walk on this side highway. It's much more pleasant to go to Redway. And this whole time, like, there's these people everywhere, like hundreds of people walking up and down the roads and the highways. And like, what are all these people doing? Heath, on the last day of our Tudong, he taught us a new term. They actually have a term for what's happening. It's called trimigration. So that's what's happening. And we walk to Redway. A lady picks us up, and she's kind of concerned about us. We haven't gotten to Redway yet. It's only a couple mile walk, but she's kind of concerned because she's like, oh, you know, there's some places where it's safe for you guys to camp and hang out, but some places are not safe. Like, you know, if the people who do this type of drug are more safe, and the people who do that type of drug are not so safe. So you want to avoid this area and that area. And she kind of gave us a ride to the market, and she's like, don't go to that part of the market because, like, that's where they hang out, and you can go to this part where it's safer for you guys. And so she gave us some information. Also went into the market, got us some allowables, and helped us out. And really nice. So we decided, yeah, we're going to keep walking. We can probably make it to the beginning of Avenue of the Giants, but we know there's this really unpleasant 3-mile section of freeway that we walked last year, which is, some of it doesn't have much of a shoulder, just have to be really careful. And so we ended up walking that, walking into the beginning of Avenue of the Giants, where camping becomes really fun and easy on the Eel River. You can have a fire, you can camp, we've got water, we can take our life straw and drink right out of the river. So things are good. So we set up camp right before the first town in Avenue of the Giants, which is called Phillipsville. So, yeah, nice camp. That was our first fire that we had. So we're making tea. Things are going well. We ate at Cadillac Walk, so we're not hungry. So the next day six, what happened? We walked through Phillipsville. We had some interactions there. And then got to the next town called, we didn't get any food in Phillipsville, but had time to walk to the next town, Miranda, which I had really good experiences in last year. Guy in a delivery truck kind of sees us. He says, hey, you know, can I give you guys something? Can I offer food? And sort of, yeah. He's like, oh, my delivery truck, if my delivery truck wasn't empty, I could just go in and give you food from my delivery truck, but I'll go into the market and get you some food. So he goes into the market and gets us some food, but not really a whole meal, but, you know, starts filling the bowls. And like, okay, so we stand in front of the market for a while. There's nobody else offers from the market. We kind of walk, do another circuit through town. A lady stops in a car. She says, oh, can I give you guys something? So she's going to, like, a whole jar of peanut butter, a whole jar of jelly, and two big jars of, like, a diced pineapple. And that became, the diced pineapple was weird because then we started getting it every day, that the same type of diced pineapple in these jar pop-top things. It was a very interesting meal that day. But she also gave us this, she said, do you like to read? And she gave us this newspaper called The Humboldt Edge, which is like by homeless people for homeless people. So it's learning about the homeless scene in Humboldt County. Reading this newspaper is just very informative. And so we've got a big meal. You know, it's like a very interesting meal. So thinking, like, you know, this is kind of very interesting stuff. I would never eat if I had a choice, but it actually kind of goes together. Like, we've got apples, we've got peanut butter, we've got bananas, jelly, pineapples. So, like, okay, let's, like, put the peanut butter in the pineapple, or, you know, just kind of combining it in different ways. And then we ended up, after that, finding a campsite, which me and Titapo, last year we had stayed at this spot, this really beautiful spot on the Eel River. It's like going into another realm, because it's, the river is there, and there's this amazing mountain, and you can barely see the highways, and a lot of wildlife too in this particular spot. It's very, very wide. And so we ended up camping there. So we're kind of collecting firewood, setting up camp, and this guy kind of, as we're starting a fire, this guy kind of comes out the entrance to the Eel River, and he says hi, and he's, starts, you know, asking about, you know, what are you guys up to, and asks if he can hang out with us for a little bit. He says he's 64 days sober, just joined the Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's just so happy because he's just got this coin which says 2 months sober. You get a coin after 2 months. And he said, oh yeah, you can sit around our fire, have tea with us. So he just sits down and give him some tea, and he's like, can I give you some food? And I'm like, oh, that's great. We can't eat in the afternoon, but yeah, you can sit around the fire with us. So yeah, he's just, he's really, proud of himself, and just, we're just talking with him. It's just really nice to meet people like this who are, turning their lives around, you know, finding some way out of dukkha, you know, finding, and he's just so like, he felt that finding monks was just, it was just such a right, good timing for him as he's deepening his commitment to sobriety, and we're, you know, encouraging him in it. So the next day, yeah, the nights were really pleasant at this time. Like our tents were working out. It was kind of cold, but not too bad. And the next day we got to a town called Myers Flat, population 200, right in the middle of Avenue of the Giants. And we had met a man there last year who we had had tea with him and on his front porch, which is right across from the post office. Like, people there just live on the highway. And his house is right there, and it's all decked out for Halloween. There's, like, skulls hanging off the trees, and, you know, fake skulls, but, you know, like, pumpkins everywhere. And so I go, oh, let's go say hi to Roy. So we go and knock on his door, and nobody answers. So we just, okay, well, let's go to the market. And we had really good luck at the market there, like young local guys offering food, kind of interested in what we're doing. A lady who, it turns out, she's does the Nam-myoho Renge Kyo practice, Japanese Buddhism. She practices every day. She's been living in Myers Flat for 8 years. Really happy to see monks. So she ends up going into the market and getting us a couple sandwiches, and she brings them out to us and offers them, and she says, oh, well, the guy at the cash register, one of these sandwiches, he said, is on him. So he wanted to get involved. Then she said, there's another guy in there wondering, like, if he can talk to you, but he doesn't want to talk to you if you can't talk, like if you're on a vow of silence. But yeah, tell him we can talk. He can come out and we'll chant a blessing. So they all come out and we explain the blessing and chant the blessing for them. So we've got, yeah, plenty of food. We've got like all sorts of food that day. Another can of the pineapple, a big bag of potato chips, a couple sandwiches. We start walking out of town because we've got enough food, and this really elderly man, he says hi to us, and then suddenly we're kind of rejigging our gear, getting ready to walk for a bit, and he comes up to us again. We're next to this little shack which says Fernando's Place, and it's some sort of like tea or coffee shack or something. It's closed, but he says, you know, see that shack? Like, I built that shack. And I said, oh, so you're Fernando? And he says, no, but I built Fernando. And we got a sense maybe he'd been living in the area forever. He was like some sort of, maybe what he meant was like he built Myers Flat. You know, maybe he was like part of the history of the town. I end up finding a really, keep walking, find a good place to eat. I might have to jump ahead here because there's some things that happened a bit later which are important, but it's going on 45 minutes of talking here. Camping is still pleasant. We're just taking our time in Avenue of the Giants, enjoying being in the Redwoods, camping on the Eel River in the Redwoods. Now, after we were in Myers' flat, this is where things started to get a little bit difficult again, was one thing that happened that day as we were walking, it was after we had had our meal and we were walking, it was about 2 p.m., and just kind of a mistake broke one of our kind of unwritten rules of Tudong, in that somebody stopped in a car and said, and handed some dried peaches out the window, and they were from Portland, and said, "Oh, offer you some dried peaches," and explained, like, "Sorry, we weren't able to eat in the afternoon, and so we didn't accept them." But thinking back, we should have just taken them and not eaten them. So it's always good to accept offerings. So they felt kind of bad, but we chatted with them for a bit. But thinking back on this, I had a feeling, like, talking about, like, circles of merit, that this, like, stopped one of the circles for, you know, at least temporarily. So if you don't respect people's generosity, then things don't keep going in the same direction. And the next day, we were planning on going alms around in this little town called Wiat, just north of Myers Flat, and kind of taking our time because it's like, oh, it's not that far, and, you know, these little towns, like, the locals are happy to support us. And so we get to Wiat, and there's no market in the town. It's just a post office and a barber shop and a volunteer fire department. So there's a few people around in the post office, and I go into the post office and ask, you know, is there a market here? And they say, oh, no, there was this huge flood in 1964. It destroyed the whole town, and there's no market anymore. This used to be a happening place. There used to be a movie theater, and everything was destroyed in this flood in 1964. So, and you see that it was 30 feet deep. The water was 30 feet deep in the town. And so we're like, okay, but do you know where the nearest market might be? Oh, if you go back to the Myers Flat, it's 5 miles that way. And then, like, well, we need to eat before noon. And then this other couple was there, and Tampamuto was outside talking to them. And they're like, oh, well, you know, the next town is Red Crest. That's like 6 miles down that way. You'll probably make it. It's an 18-minute drive. I mean, it can't be that long walking. And it's like, well, we're not going to make it. There's no way we're going to make it. So, they were concerned about us, but we thought we'd kind of given up and, okay, well, let's start walking, but we're not going to eat today. So then we walk, and it's about 5 minutes later, big truck pulls up, and it's the guy we were talking to, and he's like, oh, we're really concerned about you. So here's a couple bananas and these, like, little apple pies my wife makes. You know, they're really good. It's our last one. We'll give it to you. So we got food from these people at the post office we were talking to. And really, really, that was a very spontaneous offering, and we're just really grateful for that. That's just, it's just amazing, unexpected. And but it turned out that was all we got that day. And we're really hoping maybe somebody else would throw food out their window, but nobody did. And so we sat down at some point on the side of the highway at, like, you know, just before midday, thinking, oh, maybe a car will see us eating and they'll give us more food somehow. But no. So we each had one banana and half of this little apple pie for the entire meal that day, and then just kept walking. And Red Crest was actually pretty far, so we didn't get there till like 2 p.m. or something, or 2, or maybe even after that. And then Red Crest was like nothing. Like, it's really little town. The market is completely abandoned. There's a sign on the market that says camera and film for sale. And it's like, who buys film anymore? And there was a restaurant. It's kind of seemed to be open, but it's the afternoon. So we walked past there, just thinking, like, we don't really know. There's kind of this town, Pepperwood, at the end of Avenue of the Giants, but kind of thinking, like, okay, really hungry. And it turned out to be we walked 15 miles plus that day. It was our longest walking day. And we get to Pepperwood, which marks the end of Avenue of the Giants. So we walked the entirety of Avenue of the Giants without any ride. That was fulfilling, 32 miles over the past few days. And we end up camping in a redwood grove because it's getting dark. We had met a few people along the way. Like, we met this lady who was really concerned about us, but we're kind of hoping she might offer a place to stay, but she was just kind of concerned, you know, wondering what we were doing. So get to this redwood grove, set up our camp, really hungry. Our allowables are all gone, so we have no cheese or chocolate or anything. We've got some black tea, and we've got this green tea that Anagarka Doug had offered, this gunpowder tea. So, well, at least we'll have a hot drink. We'll try to warm up before we go to sleep. So for a kettle, and I get the this little gas canister burner stove and light it up, and it's just gone. The canister is used up. So no hot water, and just nothing that night. And then we decide, okay, well, let's do our paritta chanting and do some meditation, and we'll just hole up for the night, and maybe tomorrow we'll turn around, we'll head back to Red Crest, and so we hole up for the night, and around midnight it starts raining, like really hard, like heavy rain, and it doesn't let up for 6 hours. And so our tents are just getting more and more like caved in, and we're just sitting up all night. It turns out it's the Wanpra, so we were forced to stay up on the Wanpra. So it's like, we thought if we had to name, like myself and T-Top, we had like different chapters of the Tudong, so if we had to have like names for different chapters, like for us, the first chapter would be wet and cold, and the second chapter, this chapter would be wet, cold, and hungry. So we're just waiting for morning time, and as soon as dawn comes, we're just, and now it's Halloween. So as soon as dawn comes, we just start heading back, straight back. So we're pitching all of our hopes for a meal on this town of Red Crest, which there's nothing there. So we head back. It doesn't take that long to get there, but we're pretty exhausted. And get to the restaurant. We think, okay, well, we're going to stand outside of the restaurant. Maybe somebody will invite us in or something. And it's 9 a.m. We look at the hours of the restaurant. It says, it's like, okay, well, it's like, it's Friday, and it says Monday through Friday, and it says opens at 8:30 a.m., but it's not open. So it's the kind of place it's just open if they feel like it, if people are around. And that's closed, and there's a souvenir shop across the street. There's a couple old houses, rickety houses behind us. It's okay, well, we're not going to keep walking. We have to stand here, so we're just going to stand. So we stand there, and yeah, before long, like things start happening. The woman who saw us the day before, who was concerned about us, she lives in one of these rickety houses behind us, and she says, "Oh, you guys again? Like, do you need anything? Here's some bananas." So she gives us some bananas, and then it's like, I think I have some food in the house, but there's not much. I'll give you whatever I have. So she goes into her house and she calls out. She's like, "I've got one pack of frozen hot dogs. It's all I have. So I'm gonna thaw that up for you." So she goes into her house. She's doing that, and then the guy who owns the souvenir shop comes down. He opens his souvenir shop and waves to us, and then eventually, like, he comes out of his souvenir shop. He's like, "Coffee's ready. Are you guys going to come in and have some coffee?" And we're like, "Well, we can't use money. We wouldn't be able to purchase a cup of coffee, but thanks." And, no, "I'm going to give it to you for free. Come in. So we go in. He hands us hot cups of coffee, cream. And it's like, this is really great. And so we start talking to them, and they're like, yeah, we saw you guys last year walking through here. We didn't know what you were doing. We're really curious. And so they learned about our rules, how we're accepting food in the morning. It's, oh, thank you so much. Now we know. So if we see you again, we'll definitely offer a meal or something. And we'll do what we can. They didn't have any food in the souvenir shop, but they had a glass counter full of candy bars. So they just started putting candy bars in our bowls. And then the hot dogs are ready. So go out to kind of going back out to her. And then this car pulls up and this guy gets out and he's like, I thought you guys were statues or something. Like, you're real. You're monks. You're real. And I've been to Tibet and Thailand, and I'm Buddhist, and I practice, and I can't believe it. And so this guy is, like, from Germany, taking 3-month leave to be in America. He's like, Andreas. And he's like, he has a bag of food. And you guys need a ride or something? So I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll go back to Myers Flat. There's good camping there. That's it. That's then we know we can get food the next couple days, or pretty sure. We don't know for sure, but seems like a good area. So anyway, we get this offering of hot dogs and talk to this lady for a while, who turns out she's descended from the pioneers who founded the town of Red Crest, and she's 7th generation. And she's telling us all about the history of the area and what people did, and just fascinating. And about the flood in 64, how it wiped out these towns, and how Wiyot used to be the most happening place in the area, and then the movie theater got swept away by the flood. And so just this kind of, we were just surrounded by people just taking care of us. And Andreas then ends up giving us a ride back to Myers Flat, and he's like, anything you need, don't be humble, don't even hold back, anything you need, I want to get you any. So he gets us, he loads us up with allowables again for things we can use in the afternoon. And so we're thinking, we looked at it, he's like, yeah, okay, we're back in the game, we're not gonna starve, you know. So that was pretty great. We got like totally supported in Red Crest. We end up camping at the same kind of beautiful spot at the Eel River we camped before. We had this meal was pretty interesting because we were so hungry, and it's just like laying all the food out and looking at it, and just like, I think you don't really appreciate food if you haven't ever really been hungry. It's amazing. Food is amazing. You can't live without food. We're just like, you know, you want a hot dog? Here, a hot dog. Oh, wow, this is, even hot dogs, which, you know, most people would protest, like GMOs or, you know, but even, you know, any food when you're hungry is good. Actually, there's something funny I could say about the hot dogs, but I don't think I'll say it on the recording, but yeah, we were just so hungry. We were just eating these hot dogs, and I ended up camping out in the same place Halloween night. And after that, we tried to go alms round again in Miranda. And it's kind of interesting because you kind of, once you expect something, then it's not going to happen like that. So we're expecting, okay, Miranda was great before, so we're going to stand at the market again. So we're standing at the market, and people are kind of giving us funny looks, and nothing's really happening. And it's Halloween. So... or no, wait, this was the day after Halloween, actually. This was the day after Halloween. But still, it's like not much is happening. And so then we're standing there for a while, and then this lady comes out of the market, and she's like, you're standing on private property, you know, you're going to have to move. So we moved away from the market and went to some other area. Really soon, actually, this dog comes up, this little dog is like, ah. And this lady comes up after the dog, and she's like, would you guys like to join our potluck at the church today? We have a church over here. We've got a service, and then after the service is a potluck, and we're the Seventh-day Adventist church, and if you want to come in and get out of the cold, and you can be in the service, and we're going to do a Bible study, and then afterwards is this big potluck, and you can join in. It's vegan potluck. And so we're like, okay. And so we went in, and it's kind of surreal. We went into their hall, and they were having like a prayer and then Bible study, and people were coming and going and meeting us. And we met the pastor, who is this lady's husband, and their whole family is there, good Christian family. And then we have this potluck, we're meeting people. Everybody, it turns out every Saturday, because Seventh-day Adventists have their Sabbath day on Saturday. Every Saturday, everybody brings food for this potluck. So everybody has brought food and everybody's there. And they let us go first because they're aware that we have to eat before noon. So they let us go first. And then we chant the blessing for everybody who made the food is there. And we chant the blessing for them. So just really, really nice, really nice meal. Then we get talking to people. People are curious. Some people are asking questions. And then we're thinking we're going to maybe keep walking, but then eventually the lady who found us, she ends up, while we're talking to some other person, she's kind of organized that we're going to stay there. So then we have a place to stay in this, like a classroom, which they, turns out, seems like they use for AA meetings every Wednesday, which kind of tied back to that guy who we met. He probably had been in that classroom. And so we're in there, and then they're like, oh, you want to come to our house this evening? And like, we're going to have a letter writing session. We're going to sit around the table with our children and we're going to write letters. And it's like, okay. Tampamuto, let's write letters. So we go there and there's a fire going and it's really nice. And the kids are there. They've got a son and a daughter, and then the two younger sons who are twins, and they're all sitting around the table writing letters. So it's like, okay, well, I haven't written a letter to my parents in a long time. I usually email them, but writing a letter is kind of nice. So write a letter, like, yeah, we'll stamp it and send it for you. So Tempamuto writes letters to some relatives. I write a letter to my parents, and they're all writing letters to different people. And then we were talking for a while, and then it's like, okay, we'll come back for breakfast. We're talking about the best way we could serve you. So if you come over for breakfast, you can have breakfast with us, and there will be a lot of leftover, and we'll fill your bowls, and then you can eat that just before noon. And so they were discussing for a long time how to best look after us. So yeah, we go there for breakfast the next day. The most amazing vegan breakfast, the most amazing vegan food I've ever had in my life. I mean, like the daughter's kind of pureeing, kind of making vegan cream, basically, like pureeing like cashews and different types of nuts and things. And they've got tofu, just a huge spread of food, fruit. And so, yeah, talking and chatting for a while. But before they offered breakfast, they were... It's like this really good Christian family, really wholesome family. So turns out they only eat breakfast and lunch. They don't eat dinner, the whole family. and they're vegan. And before we got there kind of before they were ready to eat breakfast, so they were, doing like every day, I guess they read Bible stories to their kids, so the kids are all around. And like, okay, would you join us in prayer? So we... Like, okay, so we hold hands with their family and we're kind of holding hands and they're kind of like praying for us. And it's like, okay, I've never really done this before. This is fascinating. But, you feel like you've become part of the family temporarily. And so they send us on our way. And what happened after that? That was when we ended up leaving Avenue of the Giants, I think, that day, because we went back through Phillipsville, and then we left Avenue of the Giants, and we were dreading walking this stretch of freeway again, this 3 mile stretch, which is just really dangerous. And it says no pedestrians, you know, it's pretty sure it's illegal to walk there, but we don't have any choice. And, you know, so we're hoping maybe like we're going to stand out and somebody's going to, you know, maybe pick us up, but nobody was doing that. So we just start walking on the freeway again. So doing that for a while, CHP officer pulls over and gets out. He's, you guys know it's illegal and extremely dangerous to be walking on this road. And he said, yes, we just didn't have any choice. We're happy you pulled over. And so he was very respectful, though, but very official, but very respectful. And just like, it's really dangerous. And can I see your ID? And I'm thinking, I forgot my ID. It's at the monastery. Tampamuto had his ID, luckily. And I said, like, I forgot my ID, but, you know, I just spaced out, forgot it. But he's got his ID, and he's like, no problem, just as long as I have one of your IDs, like, I'll run it. As long as you're not a mass murderer or something, it's okay. So, and it was one of these SUV CHP cars, and so he says, okay, put your sticks in the back, I'll give you a ride. And so he's like, where do you want to go? Garberville, Redway? Where are you guys going? I'll take you wherever you want to go. And so we're talking, chatting with him, really nice guy, actually. And he's like, okay, well, let's go to Redway. We're thinking we might stay near there. And he's kind of asking about what we're doing. And we're thinking, gosh, how much of what we do is illegal? Like, okay, well, we stand in front of markets, but we don't ask people for things. We just stand. And if somebody asks, and he's kind of trying to make sense of it. And he's like, that sounds kind of passive aggressive. And I said, well, that's one way of looking. He said, no, I'm not being disrespectful. I'm just saying, like, you know, what's your mental state? And, I'm kind of thinking, well, you know, it is true. We have to be careful. Like, you know, we can't be, like, seeing people as, like, you know, people who are going to give us stuff. We have to be wishing people well. It's a subtle balance. And, you know, making ourselves available, but not kind of seeing everybody passing by as like, you know, why aren't they giving me something? So he dropped us off at Redway. He was happy that we were respectful to him. He was respectful to us. And we ended up thinking, you know, it's getting kind of late. Where are we going to camp? We want to kind of get out of Redway. Just on a whim, we walk north a little ways again, down out to the road that it goes out to Shelter Cove. So this road goes 23 miles to the coast. Can't recall the name of the road at the moment, but we walk out a couple miles. It just gets really pleasant, really nice houses there. And then everybody was really respectful. People, one guy slowed down and just did a really slow Anjali to us and then kept driving on the road. We get out, get to the Eel River. We're thinking, okay, we'll go down to the river. We're going down, and I step in a big pile of human excrement. And, oh, God. And then we see excrement everywhere. Thinking, this is kind of doesn't feel right. And we're looking around for a campsite on the river, and then Tampamuto goes up to a level area. He's like, yeah, people are here. People are living here. So there's a lot of homeless people around, and the trimmigrants are around, so they're staying here too. But it didn't feel, there was something about it that felt not right to be there. So there was a creek, so we filled our platypus bottles and went back up, thinking we're going to walk a little bit longer, see what we find. So we got up and walked not very far at all, and there was a redwood grove on the other side of the road. It's just like the Avenue of the Giants, the big redwoods. So we walk into that grove, and right away it just felt really comfortable. And we get kind of deep into the grove, and there's just some really nice level spots to camp, to set up our tents. And then we get set up, we set up our tents, and then we hear somebody walking through the grove. And I... I kind of think it's a lady maybe walking her dog. Or something. Oh no, she's going to call the cops. She's going to call a ranger or something. And so it turns out though, this guy kind of comes up to us, big guy. He's like, "Hey, how's it going? You know, I'm Bill, you know, welcome to my home." You know? And he's like, "I live here. You know, I live in a tent back in the groove. And I've been living here for a year." And he's like, "You guys want some apples? I'm happy to share what I have with you." He's really generous. And turns out he writes poetry. And he was reading the Three Steps, One Bow book. He's like, "You guys know these monks who did like, you know, 1,000 heads bowing or something, pilgrimage?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm reading that right now." And, "Wow, are you guys doing that? What are you guys?" So we know, but we know those monks, you know. And so he's like, "Well, I love you guys. You know, you're welcome in my home tonight in the Redwoods. I live here by choice." And so it's like, okay. So we stayed in his, you know, kingdom that night, in the Redwood Kingdom. And thinking, okay, well, thinking the next day maybe we're going to go to Redway. I'm not sure, maybe Garberville is close by too. We can go either place for alms round, so we've got options for the next day. So I have to, the next day is an important one. So we get up and he's given us all these apples. We learned to not say no, but we can't eat them because if we store something up, we can't store food up in order to eat it, but we know that to receive things, just maybe we can give it away. It gives us an opportunity to be generous. So we have all these apples with us that he's like picked off some local tree that he knows about. And he's been eating just apples and nuts and just whatever, foraging, basically. He's been foraging for food. He's a big guy, too. So we walk into Redway. Something funny happened in Redway that morning. It was really early, and nobody was around. It was kind of foggy, and we're standing at the market, and Tampamuto went in and asked if we can stand, and they said, "Yeah, maybe a few minutes." So, but we don't like people loitering around here. There's a lot of people loitering. We don't like it. So we're standing out there. We're thinking, okay, maybe 5 minutes or something. And this, it was really funny. This Thai lady drives up to us, a young Thai woman in an SUV. And she's like, "Do you speak Thai?" And then we're like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Great." And then she drives off. It's like, you're not going to give us any food? Like, so, I think she didn't realize what we were doing, but it's kind of not so common in America. But so we kept, when then we said, okay, let's go to Garberville. So we walk. It's only 2 miles to Garberville. It's kind of a nice walk. And we sing. This is where we're like a lot of people like walking between Garberville and Redway, and so we see this one guy and it's like, okay, I've got these apples. This guy is kind of he looked poor, so it's like, "You want some apples?" And he's like, "Yeah, apples are awesome. Have a great day." It's like, okay, get into Garberville. Right when we got into Garberville, this guy gets out of a car and he's like, "Are you guys monks? Where are you from? What are you guys doing?" And so we start talking with him. He's an older guy in his early 60s, maybe. And we're like, we're kind of on this walkabout, this like maybe peace walk that we're doing. It's a part of our practice. And he's like, can I offer you like a couple dollars?" And so we said, thank you, but we don't accept money. Like, we just accept food." He's like, "Really? That's unusual." And so then he's like, "Well, I could get you some food. Maybe I'm staying in a hotel room. I've got some food. And somehow I asked him, like, you kind of look Native American. Are you Native American?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm part Native American. And, I've actually walked all the way across the country before with it's a Nichiren group, Japanese Buddhist group who did these peace walks and these peace pagodas all over the world and walked all the way across the country with this group. And he said, I did several walks with them and I walked all the way across Japan. And so I said, oh, this is really interesting. And I said, well, before we started this walk, we decided we wanted, anytime we do a walk like this, we dedicate the goodness and the blessings to something or someone. So we decided we're going to dedicate the goodness to the Native Americans. And when he heard that, he just completely opened up and he said, okay, well, get in my car and I'll introduce you to my wife and we're going to take you to a restaurant and we want to get to know you. And so we got in his car and he takes us to a hotel. It turns out he's a war chief from the Algonquins, Massachusetts, from the East Coast, and he's visiting relatives in Redway. And he's in this hotel room with his wife, and so he calls his wife out. She comes out. She's a really interesting person. She's Native American and healer, psychic, just very, very pure-hearted woman. You know, we all start talking, and just we're really learning a lot about them and about the walks he did, and they're learning about us. And they're saying, okay, well, we can't all fit in the car, but the restaurant we want to take you, it's nearby, so we'll walk down there and she'll drive the car and we can walk together. And I can't believe I'm walking with monks again. I haven't walked with monks since 96. It's been so long. So he's really psyched up at this point. He's walking with us. We go in, he held the eternal flame, which was sparked from the fire that was still going from Hiroshima. He carried it all the way across Japan, and then they brought it to America, and he carried it all the way across America from Washington, from Seattle, Chief Seattle's grave in Seattle, Washington, to Washington, D.C., walking all the way with this group, this Nichiren. And so he's getting really interested in what we're doing. And when we're at breakfast, they get us breakfast, and they've called their relatives. Their relatives are coming in. They're introducing them to us. And he says that, you know, when me meeting you guys reminds me of this prophecy, which is supposed to be fulfilling itself right now. And there's this prophecy that the Native Americans had before the white people came that there's going to be people coming from over the sea, and if they come holding things, then that's unwholesome. And if they come with open hands, then they'll have goodness for you. But if they're holding things, then that's not going to be good for the people. And so if they come holding things, there's going to be certain things that they're holding which are going to bring unwholesome things into our lives which we haven't had before. And I can't remember the whole list, but it was like a gun and a book and a mirror. He said, yeah, we didn't have vanity before, but they brought a mirror. That's one of the objects. So, and there was a few other things which then were introduced into their way, into their culture, which caused their culture to degenerate. And then he said, there's some sort of, these are like fires that are consuming their people then since that point up to the present day. But at this time, then as the white people start to see the drawbacks of materialism, then the white people will be taking on more spiritual practice. And as spiritual practice starts and meditation starts to take root in the West, more and more people will be interested in it. And at a certain time, all white people will have a choice to either choose a spiritual path or a materialistic path. And if they choose the spiritual path, then the life will be wholesome. If they choose a materialistic path, then their life will be suffering and unwholesome. And if those who choose the spiritual path then join together with the Native Americans who are still holding on to the old ways, and small percentage of Native Americans who are still holding on to their beliefs and spirituality. And if they join together, then that's the white and the red join together. If those two join together, then the yellow, speaking of the Asian, and the black from the African will also join in. But the red and the yellow have to join in first. And if the yellow and the black join together, then what they create is the most cohesive and harmonious and most powerful spiritual nation that the world has ever seen. And so he has this prophecy, and he says, "You make me think of that prophecy." And he is telling us this, and our hair is just standing on end. And I completely did a hash job of it just now. I think I have to look it up on the internet to get it. He said it a lot better than that, but he's telling us this over breakfast. He's, okay, you have to meet our relatives. And we say, well, we haven't chanted a blessing for you yet. We need to do a blessing ceremony. So let's do it for your relatives. Let's do it at their house. So he says, okay, well, they live in Redway. So then his wife's going to drive to Redway, and we decide we're going to walk back to Redway with him because he wants to walk with monks again. And so we backtrack. We walk the same road back. And he's telling me all sorts of stuff during this walk, learning a lot from him. But also he's like, we're backtracking. You have to learn how to backtrack. You have to be like a wolf. And he's telling me about how he backtracked, how he tracked a wolf one time in Canada because he wanted to see where its den was. And he was following the tracks in the snow, and then he got to the den on the top of a mountain, and the tracks stopped. And there was no wolf in the den. And he said he realized that wolves were similar to bears in that they have a certain skill called backtracking, where they can walk backward in their own footprints in order to circle around behind their prey. And he looked back and the wolf was behind him. And so he said, that's what we're doing. We're backtracking. And we met up with their relatives. Did a blessing ceremony for them. They've got two young kids. So Tom is the name of the man who was with us, and then his wife, I can't recall her name, but her son there lives in Redway, and then he has two young boys, 5 and 6 years old, something like that. And these young boys remember their past lives, it's looking at the palm of their hands. And they're like, yeah, you were this and that guy, and they would be like, they say, yeah, we walked in the house one day and they were in the bathtub together talking about their past lives with each other. Like, yeah, you got shot or something. And like, I lived longer than you in this one. And they were just, they had no sense that it was something they shouldn't talk about or that wasn't real. So they were just, and so these two boys, very interesting. They were very receptive to the blessing ceremony. And they say like, you know, can you come to our house sometime? Can you, asking about us and just very interested. So we, to make a long story short, we hung out with them all day till much later. And then some of their relatives gave us a ride to Leggett, where we thought we would go back to Gombe and see if we could stay another night there, which we could, which we did. And of course, they were just very, very happy again to give breakfast and send us on our way. They had called somebody in a place called Black Oak Ranch. Old name of it is the Hog Farm, and people may have heard of Wavy Gravy. We had a connection from Gombe to stay the next night at this place, which they gave us a description, drew a map for us where it would be. We're walking from Leggett. So it's pretty far, but we thought, oh, we'll just start walking and see what happens. We walked this alternate road to 101, really, really beautiful, just kind of marveling at the beauty of the hills and the mountains. Just really lovely day of walking. Then got back onto the freeway, got on Pleasant again. After not too long, car stopped. Lady from Oakland, sales rep, picks us up. She says her husband is a Qigong master, and talking and chatting with her for a bit, she takes us all the way to where we think this place is. And so it's big fields. It's where they, people might be familiar with it. It's these big fields where they landed all the helicopters and had all the fire staging for the fire earlier, the Leggett fire earlier this year. And so we're kind of walking back and forth looking for, there's supposed to be like a railroad crossing sign or something, and we don't quite know what we're looking for, but eventually we find it, go in, and we're supposed to ask for Dorje, because she has been the one who invited us, wants us to stay there. So she's not around yet, but people point us to this old, like, run-down two-story barn, which says intense on the side of it. It's I-N space T-E-N-T-S. And it's like, okay, and there's all these poles and tent-making equipment, sewing machines everywhere, and the whole downstairs is full of organic foods and onions, squash. And we're there for a while. She gets home. She, yeah, very happy to see us. Really interesting woman. Just very, very warm-hearted, generous. Puts us up in the upper story of her. It turns out it's her studio. She lives in another house. So it's like, just like sewing machines everywhere, and rolls of canvas, and just all sorts of stuff all over the place. And sets us up there with some mattresses. And so she's learning about us. She's saying, oh, I'm going to go for evening practice at Gomde. You want to go? And, well, sure, okay. We just walked from there, but okay, let's let's go. So she's like driving this huge like diesel truck, and get in. And so drives back to Gomde. And so then a third visit to Gomde, we do evening puja with them. They're just really happy to see us again. And so yeah, then that evening, it's not that late. It's maybe 6 p.m. or something. And Dorje is kind of like, well, can you sit at dinner with us? And we said, yeah, well, we can sit and drink tea. And so she's like, I want you to meet like everybody. So she invites us into their dinner, and they have this communal dinner every night. Someone different cooks every night. Long table, and there's like 20 people there. And we're just meeting everybody. Really, I can't even go into it now who we met there, but it's like original Woodstock crew, hippie crew. This is the longest existing American commune, 48 years, third generation, like going into fourth generation of families living there, same people. The way they all met was even before Woodstock. I might be getting this slightly wrong, but even before Woodstock, Warner Brothers was doing some sort of movie that was supposed to take place in India in a big bus. And so they hired all these hippies to go there as like extra hippie extras in this movie, in this bus or something. I don't even know what the plot was. And so they go to London and they have a huge party to be able to buy a bus. And so they have this huge party, and they buy a bus, and they drive to India from London. And that's how they all met. And all the people at this dinner table was the people who were in that bus who drove from London to India. And they're all reminiscing about it, and it's like 40 years ago or something. But they all had this... Originally, they started their commune in New Mexico. And Red Dog, a big name from Woodstock, he was there at the dinner table, and his claim to fame is, one is like he was an announcer at Woodstock, but also he, after Woodstock, he said, okay, you know, I just want to say everyone here, you know, at such and such time is invited to our place in New Mexico. And so everyone went, and they weren't expecting that, so they left. And then they came to Laytonville. So that's how it started, and used to be called the Hog Farm, now it's Black Oak Ranch, and very interesting. And then Dorje just really picked up on our rules really quickly. So she's like, okay, you guys, I'm going to make you like the biggest breakfast ever. And I'm going to send you with lunch and I'm going to take you to Laytonville. So she ended up making us a big meal. And yeah, it's kind of, we also, she picked up on our rules. It was like we had been, by the lady from Oakland, she had given us some power bars and like a couple apples. But it was in the afternoon, so we accepted it, but we didn't accept it with an intention to eat it. We just thought we're going to give it away as soon as we can. So we ended up giving it to Dorje. And then in the morning, she's like making our lunch together, and she's like, is it okay if I offer this to you? And we said, well, yeah, we accepted it without an intention to eat it. She's like, okay, I thought that would be okay in your rules, like if I offered it back to you now. And it's like, okay. And she ended up taking us to Laytonville. That was, so that was yesterday. That was yesterday. And then we walked from Laytonville. I kind of thought there was a possibility we would get a ride. We ended up nobody giving us a ride. We walked and walked and walked all day. It's a pretty hard day of walking. It was about the same, felt the same as the day we were, that we ate very little food. And walked all day, and it's just getting late. Really, really the worst sections of freeway yet, like no shoulder at all, and just having to jump up on the hillside to dodge big trucks. And it's just really awful. Like 10 CHP officers drove by, and none of them stopped for us. Really weird experience. Like one guy actually, a pickup truck stopped on the opposite side of the road right across from us, and we thought he was stopping for us. And then a CHP went up behind him and got out. And we're like, what's going on here? But the CHP didn't have his lights on. And then the truck just drove away. I'm like, okay, well, did that, what was happening there? Did the CHP say, don't give those guys a ride or something? Or, and says, no ride there. And starting to kind of get on in the day thinking it's going to get dark, we're not going to get back. And then we see a big truck honking at us, and it's Heath Garman. We're like, Heath! And so he's waving at us, and he's got he's on his cell phone. And so we knew, yeah, Heath Garman. So Heath Garman is, he is someone, he's 38 years old, a young guy. He's the son of Bud Garman. This is, these are contractors who have been doing earthwork at the monastery since day one. You know, Heath would have started working here when he was like 18 or something. And so just really good friends, really lovely family, lovely people. And last year on Tudong, he had given a really explicit invitation for myself and Tanti Tapo to stay at his place as we were starting out. But we missed it. We got a ride past there and weren't able to find it. So so this time he saw us, and I was so happy to see him. And he ended up, we were almost at his gate anyway. So we walk about another mile, and there's this big gate, and a truck is coming out of the gate, and it's his wife. And she's kind of like, Heath just called me and told me to come out and greet you guys and invite you in. So yeah, come in. We've got a guest house. We just finished this guest house a week ago, and you guys can stay there. And you can stay in this guest house. Suddenly we had a very hard day of walking. We were really exhausted, had a place to stay. Heath got home. We just hanging out in their house. You know, it's really nice because these people have been coming here, and they've been really generous with us and just become really good friends over the year. And we've never really had a chance to be, you know, in their house and as their guests. So they were just really, really happy to have us. And, you know, Bita is the other brother, Heath's brother. So yeah, he was there too. He lives just right close by, and the kids were around. And so just hanging out, chatting late into the evening. Really, really nice. And, they're really salt of the earth people. They work this heavy machinery, and just really, really pure-hearted, good people. So that was really nice to be there on the final night. So they do know something about our rules, like Heath's wife Kara's asking a lot of questions, and kind of she's not so familiar, but she's really interested in knowing about us and how we live. And she's heard so much about the monastery, but hasn't really had an opportunity to come out. So we have this guest house, and then in the morning time, first Heath shows up because he has to leave early. He shows up with coffees, so we've got coffee and cream, and he wants to hang out and chat for a bit. And then Bita shows up, the other brother. He shows up with coffees and cinnamon rolls, and it seems like they hadn't actually talked to each other, so it was like generosity coming from all these different directions. Then one of the daughters, it's like a 10-year-old daughter, comes in with a plate of eggs and bacon, and so we have all this breakfast coming in, and really nice. And Kara ended up giving us a ride when she dropped the kids off for school this morning, gave us a ride back to the monastery. We got back here around 8:30. We saw Tanti Dipanyo heading out for Fry Vineyards, and that was it. So it's still, since that was, it's hard to believe that was this morning, but so that's, I guess that's kind of 2 weeks in a nutshell. But to summarize, it's not so easy to summarize it or to define. To define what happens in this type of thing, because there's a whole mind state that you're in before generosity comes, and then once it comes to you, it's kind of like then it's known, or then it's, you kind of feel a bit more comfortable, but there's the uncertainty is always there, and so the reflection is just very, very raw kind of uncertainty, and that goes into the death reflection in a very real way, because it's really difficult actually to face uncertainty. It's the mind kind of spins out and wants things like, well, we have this plan, we have that plan, we have this plan, we have that plan, but Tudong is just such a blessing, because it just flies in the face of that kind of mind is just dukkha. So the mind spinning out thinking, you know, maybe when we get there, that person will do that for us, or that person will do that for us. It doesn't help the situation. It's just when you can be completely with uncertainty, then I remember talking about this last year too, it becomes like, it's like sacred uncertainty. It becomes something which is sacred, because when you're completely in the moment, then things that start happening are better than you could have ever imagined, and also very, very humbling, and everything starts to have meaning when you live in uncertainty in that way. And so we talk about anicchang a lot in Buddhism, and everything always is anicchang, everything is always uncertain, even if we kind of know there's going to be a meal tomorrow in the monastery, we don't know for sure if there's going to be a meal. But when you get out on Tudong, it's highlighted, so that uncertainty just... It becomes very, very real. And that goes into all sorts of other themes too, because loving kindness was another big theme on Tudong. We were chanting the Metta Sutta every day and chanting it for people, and people were receptive to it. And when you face uncertainty, you face death, and then the response to the acknowledgement of death is loving kindness. And that just comes out of that very, very naturally. And yeah, it's very powerful. It's a kind of entering into that sphere of cultivation that is Tudong. I think I'll leave it there. It's going on 2 hours, so.